Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I'm back. I have returned from my, I don't want to call it a vacation because it was more of a pain than it was a pleasure, but I am here. We are here. Browner and Lawhead, John Browner, Jason Lawhead. We are bringing you spokes. We're bringing you spokes and jokes. Actually, we're bringing you jokes live tomorrow night, which we'll get to later in the show. But before we get to that, let me introduce the man who is the co-host of Browner and Lawhead right here on the Mighty 1090 ES. Mightier, my bad, Bill Hagen. Mightier 1090 ESPN on your radio dial, on your YouTube, and on your podcasting. The cat man himself, Jason Lawhead.
What up, my man? How was your trip? How was your trip? You said it was a pain. Was it more of a paincation? Is that what it was? Like,
yeah, that, man. It was a
that should be a term.
It was paincation is always about when you visit your family.
Right.
That's a paincation.
That's it, exactly.
It was no paying.
Yeah, work a joke around that for tomorrow night because that's funny. Because paincation is a great term.
It wasn't vacay as in space. It was more like a ouch, ooh, ah, headache, aspirin, marijuana. Jack Daniels. I can just a lot of things had to be consumed to get through that four day run I just had. But I love Chicago. Chicago is my hometown. Every time I get to visit it, and every time I get to be there for an extended time, like I was this time here, I always find time to hit up my favorite food places and just be in the city. I always take a night out for myself just to kind of catch myself up on the nightlife. And I will tell you this. The economy is weird in different places. Downtown Chicago has drastically become a place I do not recognize. There are high-end stores that are gone. There are places where there is security, where there normally is no security. Like the Bean is an iconic fixture in downtown Chicago. You now have to be wanded down, okay, by police.
Really?
Just to get in it. Yeah.
Wow.
Chicago's taking an interesting turn. And not for the worst, but more from a safety measure.
Mm-hmm.
There are police on every corner on Michigan Avenue, which obviously is needed if you know anything about what's going on there. And it's just the reassurance that they have to give people, tourists in that part of town, walking around. It's very smart of the city to do. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get those businesses back open and to try to just get the street back to what I remember it being. But again, it still had a 1,000 people walking per block. It still looks like it would in a movie where you look up the sidewalk and all you see is these heads moving.
Yeah.
Like full metropolitan, Gotham look to it. So, I mean, it was great for me, but you know, dealing with family.
Right. Well, my wife and I were there in early August and I didn't really notice the differences, but I'm not from there, but I've spent enough time in Chicago. We had great weather and the city was still vibrant, but you could tell like there was a slower bit of stuff than the old Chicago of pre-pandemic of really teeming.
Mm-hmm.
But still a great city. And what you kind of went, in my opinion, the best time, like early fall, late summer, early fall crossover, Chicago weather is just, the city is just perfect to be in at that time.
You know, there was a fantastic pocket of weather.
Yeah.
It never got below 50.
Mm-hmm.
And it never got above 65.
Right. And so
when you're off that lake, it's such a cool, it's such a cool presence because there's no humidity. There was zero humidity. There was no heat, but there was also no cold. It was
your body recognizes what time of year, where you are. Like your body has a sense. Like you could have been like you could be hit on the head with amnesia immediately, but for some reason, I think the human body would know it's fall, it's this time of year, it smells like this, it feels like this, the air is like this. I know at least where I am on earth. I think your body would recognize that over everything.
The neighborhood I grew up in has been absolutely decimated. It's gone. It's been knocked all down. It's now a grass field. Where I went to high school, that neighborhood literally looks like the Jetsons. And I'm like, wait, what happened here?
Wow.
So it's for the good. People are screaming about gentrification and things of this nature, but I have a very different take on that. If you don't take care of the neighborhood, someone else will.
Right.
Like a marriage. You don't take care of your wife, someone else will. You don't take care of your husband, someone else will. And this is what happened with the property in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Y'all didn't take care of it. Somebody else said, oh, we'll take care of that. And now you can't complain about it. So, you know, your ex-wife has got a new man and they on vacation.
That's right.
You still sitting around, you know, in your underwear, screaming at the TV. So, but that's nor here or there. That's nor here or there. We are in a city with a playoff baseball team. All hell done broke loose in the sports landscape of San Diego. For the first time in almost a little bit over a decade, the San Diego Padres will be a postseason contender in a regular 162-game format, obviously because when it was a truncated 60-game season, they were able to make it in. This team has been through so much this year, whether it be Fernando Tatis, whether it be the trade, whether it be this lull that they hit. They've found a way to keep their head above water and to be consistent. It has not been pretty. As a person who has been vocal and out front about this organization and this team, this year has not been pretty. But when you end in success, you can't complain.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it can't be pretty all the time. And that's what good teams do, is that they kind of weather the storm of not being, you know, pretty all the time, but getting to the place that they actually belong and on paper they should be. And so that's a feat. And yeah, I think one of the biggest things, and you talk about, we all know the obvious, you know, challenges and the different things and the trade that came late. And there was the one trade that was, you know, kind of the big trade of everybody, but then there was the separate trade, which was Hader. And I think that is the one real big thing. I think when you really point to this team and, you know, you traded your closer at the deadline for another closer who was struggling, but proven, but struggling, and then came to you and struggled even worse. So then you had this dual trade of Hader is a gas can when he gets here. Soto isn't hitting when he gets here. And although these great positive moves that, you know, kind of felt like it was a switch flip early, that light didn't come on. You're like, okay, there's the trades, boom. And then the light was just dim and dim and dim. And for Melvin to work Hader back, you know, work him out of the closer role, get him some confidence and some pitches and some batters in certain other situations, go to Nick Martinez, get work out of him in production, while I think all the time along, Bob Melvin knew Josh Hader has to be our closer in October. I don't care how bad he is right now. The only way we have a chance is if the Ducks are in a row, which is Darvish, Snell, Musgrove, Clevenger, and Hader at the back while these guys in the lineup are hitting. That's our only chance. And what a great job. I think that went unseen in that big stretch post trade deadline. And I think Bob Melvin deserves a lot of credit for keeping that team on track enough through all those hiccups. Soto not hitting, the other guys kind of being inconsistent, giving you some power, but still not really like zoning in. Manny kind of carrying everything. That was huge. And I think that's what propelled this team into the playoffs. That's what's made them better than the Brewers, probably better than the Phillies when they're just kind of going neck and neck. So, you know, I think that's the big, big thing. And if Hader's right, this team is dangerous. You don't want to play them. I don't care if you won 112 games and you've beaten them.
Same thing I say here.
You know?
Same thing I say here. I agree with you. They're dangerous for this fact. When the year started, they were picked to be a contender. When the year started, they were said to have, if not the best, one of the best rotations in baseball. And now here we are at the end of the season. Darvish is healthy and playing lights out. He was the pitcher of the month. Blake Snell seems to have figured out his rhythm. And Joe Musgrove has found his consistency.
Right.
And you throw in Mike Clevenger at some point. So now we're down to four guys who we know can deliver because we've seen them deliver in other places in high leverage moments, whether it be Yu Darvish in the playoffs, whether it be Blake Snell in the World Series. We've seen these guys do things in very high leverage situations. So I 100% believe that whoever they play, there'll be no fear There'll be no intimidation. This is not a young roster who doesn't know what they're doing. Right. It's too young to know that they're, you know, to be in the moment. These are veteran guys who've all, in some way, shape, or form, participated in the playoffs before, whether it be Manny Machado, whether it be the shortened season, which was wacky in itself. This will be a home, this will be a playoff situation. The crowd's going to be roaring. Every pitch is going to be vastly tense. And we're going to see this team play in a way that I think they haven't played so far this year. I think they're going to be relaxed.
Yeah.
Because I think they've really felt the pressure of the choke that happened last year. And then that choke trying to find his way back into the season this year, only to have the trade kind of blow the choke talk up. And then to have them kind of, the guys who they traded for, struggle. But also, by the way, starting to find their way. Like, Drury's had his moments. Bell's really still kind of struggling. But Soto seems to have found his stride now. So this team is dangerous, whether it be New York, whether it be St. Louis, or through some crazy turn of events, it be Atlanta. Like, I like it either way.
Yeah, no, I think, and you're right when you say from the beginning of the season, when they, even before all these trades and all these moves they had to make, and the disappointment with Tatis not coming back to this team, they were still expected before the season on paper, hey, you guys are going to be a contender. You should be a contender. And if you were to say from that point all the way to this point, and we're ending the season, and you were to say, man, the Padres finished 25 games behind the Dodgers, you would probably go, oh, God, what a terrible season. I mean, these guys don't have a prayer. But they got in because of the expansion. They don't have a prayer. But it's opposite of that, actually. Actually, they finished 25 games out. And this is the best situation they've been in against the Dodgers if they had to face them head-to-head. This is the best Padre. This is the best Padre team right now, even 25 games back, than the Dodgers have ever seen in the years they've been having them in their rearview mirror. So that's a plus, I think, for this team. And yeah, you know, I'd like to see in the matchup them go to New York. I think a Soto feeling good against an old Eastern Division opponent that he has seen a bunch of times when he played in Washington, you know, that side of the country, I think will, feed his kind of competition. And all you need is a Soto, even in a series, you know, in the type of series that's won on pitching, you just need a Soto to hit 250, 260, and a couple of those hits be game breakers, right? Because, if you've got a couple of those, even if you hit 260, 250, 260, 270 in the series, you collected some hits, and if those are game breakers and break games open, and your pitching is what has to win anyway, it has to win. So you can win a series with Soto and Machado hitting 260, a big 260, but you can't win a series with Darvish with an over 4 ERA or Snell with over a 4 ERA, you know. So so even if those guys hit 350, right, you're probably going to still lose that kind of a series. So they're dangerous for a lot of reasons.
So what we have seen, and I've been saying this all year, and this has been consistent from me, we've seen this pitching staff stop the best lineups in baseball.
Yeah.
We've seen it. Now, our offense had not been able to muster up enough runs to make it count at the end of the day, but we've seen our starters shut down the Dodgers on multiple occasions, different guys on multiple occasions. We've seen our staff shut down the Mets. I can't recall what they did against the Braves, but we've also seen them shut down the Cardinals. So I feel good about the position that they're in. I think the only real uphill battle that they're going to have is if they make it to a 5 or 7-game series against the Dodgers. I think that's going to be a lot of weight for them to pull, just simply because the amount of talent that the Dodgers have and the pitching. I mean, they have dominated us this year, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
But we've been competitive. Now, is this one of those situations where you're competitive, and then you get to the postseason and you finally break through on these dudes? Or is it a situation where you get there and then you still don't get the result that you're looking for? But getting there, it's not necessarily the goal, but it would be a win.
Here's the good news. Last three times they've played the Dodgers, this is post-trade, post-new faces, post-the team kind of gelling together. Yes, they lost all three of those series, 2-3, but the game one of each of those series saw Darvish, Snell, and Musgrove start in those three opening games of the series, and they won all three of those. And so Manaea had two of those starts in those nine games I'm mentioning. Ugh. So he'll never see it. You know. So what I'm saying is when you do shorten up that, and we talk about a 5 or 7 game series, and you look at the past history, and you can say, oh, well, the Dodgers have owned them all year. Okay, yeah, a lot of those games were in the front end. And then, but they won the last three series is, you know, it was, you know, 6-3. Okay, but, you know, the first game of those series, which are important in postseason, and the arms that went for the Padres, that's a good sign. That's a good sign because on a shorter scale, that's really where the series is going to be won or lost, are in those first three games, whether it's a probably a 5 or a 7 game series, obviously, depending on where you are. Are you up 2-1 in a 5 game? Are you up 3-0 or 2-1 in a 7 game? And do you get those starters back at the back end of that series again that's been successful? So you could say what you want with the dominance and yes and everything, but it's a different Padres team coming to this October. And if they can get through the first round, you know, I think that at some point you got to slay the dragon. And I think in a 5-game series, that's prime pickings. Go get an early one, go get game 3 and put the pressure back on the Dodgers. And yes, they're great. And maybe they just outplay you. Maybe you play great enough to win a 5-game series and they just outplay you. And you can go into the offseason, you know, licking your chops. Can't wait till pitchers and catchers report and the fans are as well. But, you know, to say that it's just a rollover, which you would have said with the first half roster, or you would have said any other time, or you would have said with a different manager possibly, or whatever situations is, you'd say it's a rollover. You got to hope that, you know, whatever, but it's not.
And let's not forget this team is missing one of its massive key pieces, which we won't go into detail about. But, you know, last time we were on this show was Wednesday. And since Wednesday, we've had a Thursday night football game. Now, the problem with what happens with football is it doesn't matter what happened on Thursday. By the time Monday comes, Tuesday for us, today being today, comes around, the narrative has changed, the topic has changed. They're now talking about other things. But I want to go over this thing that happened with Tua because I believe it's vitally important to what's going to happen to football going forward. You can't tell me that they can't change rules, because that's always the thing in sports. Oh, well, you know, that's just the way things are. That's just the way the game is. Blah, 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 blah. Here's proof that if something is important enough, they'll change it. The NFLPA and the NFL have come to an agreement about a loophole. I don't even know why this even existed. That there was a loophole in the concussion rule that gross motor function, now it doesn't matter what it is. You're out. You're out. Because if that had been the case, we wouldn't have seen Tua laying on his back throwing up the west side on the turf. I don't know, because that's what it is. West side?
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. I don't know what has to happen. And I think, unfortunately for Tua, he's going to be the example of why Thursday night games should not exist. He's going to have brain damage, because he had 2 concussions in less than 5 days. Think about that. He had 2 brain injuries, not an ankle, not an arm, not a hand. He had 2 brain injuries.
Those are Antonio, in less than 5 days. Those are Antonio Brown stats.
Thank you. And you see what's happening to him? He butt naked in a pool in Dubai somewhere. Okay. So Tua, the medical staff, the doctor who cleared him to go back into the game on Thursday, has now been scapegoated and he's been fired. I think that man should have his law license stripped away so he can then sue, or his medical license, so he can then sue and we can find out why they really put Tua back in the game and lied and said it was a back injury. Like, the NFL is a gladiator sport. We get that. But we have way too much information now on concussions for them to have let that man go back onto the field after he clearly was concussed, only to have him come out on Thursday, get thrown to the ground in what, to me, again, I didn't get hit, to me, didn't look vicious at all. Looked like the run-of-the-mill modern-day sack. They grab him, they throw him to the ground pretty hard because, it's, again, other guys are getting killed. It's football. And for him to literally just be gone, 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 like they had to stabilize his neck. They couldn't even put him on a cart. By the way, where was the cart? Why they had to wheel this man off?
I got a question. I got a question. With all that being said, everything that you said, doctor probably did, you know, could have. I'm not disputing any of that stuff. Is he too small to play in this league? Because what I've seen in the last 2 weeks was a guy that might be small and play smaller than he is. You know, we talk about guys that play bigger than they are.
Yes.
Guys play smaller than they are, right? You have to be able to, like, he was pushed down and then was thrown back and bounced off the turf like a child. Like you said, that sack against Cincinnati, that was just, you know, got most guys can physically resist some type of that energy and go down in a more, you know, a more competitive way, I would say. I feel like this guy is being thrown around like a child. Like, you know, it's not impossible. Danny Ferry was 6'10", 11, and he played 6'6". You can play smaller than you are, right? Like, no, I mean, everybody always says, like, oh, that guy's 6', he plays bigger than he is. But I don't know if we recognize a lot. I mean, football's a dangerous sport. Every guy's a one legal hit away from maybe never remembering their name, right?
We'll remember our name. We'll be back in a second, Browner. Brown and Lawhead back here on the Mighty Air 1090 ESPN. If you guys are just joining us, thank you guys for joining us. If you are listening via podcast or if you're watching via YouTube, thank you for joining us. As always, like, share, and subscribe. To find the show, you head over to your iTunes store or YouTube, or just Google Browner and Lawhead and you'll get the show. Like I said, like, share, and subscribe. We were really having a... Jason was really making a really great point about Tua Tagovailoa and the concussion situation that has developed with the Miami Dolphins. And we also discussed the Padres being into the playoffs for the first time in a 162-game season in over a decade. We've got plenty of more stuff to talk about Monday Night Football and some football over the weekend because, as you know, we are a Monday through Wednesday show. So the last time y'all talked to us was Thursday, and the last time we shared our thoughts with you was the same. Look at me dying over here. Jason, finish your thought.
Yeah.
Because what you said about Tua, you said it. It makes perfect sense. I've never heard a person say that out loud before, that he is small, but he plays smaller than he is.
I really feel like that. When you look at those two hits specifically, and let's say he didn't even get concussed from those hits and he just got up and then, but if you were to break those hits down, he really goes down so light, like a feather, like without a resistance. I mean, the one is just a push to his to his chest, and he backpedals, and he goes back down and bounces off of the turf, kind of like a child would if a man pushed them at that kind of point, right? Like, and then the sack against Cincinnati. I mean, he was literally thrown down like a rag doll in a normal kind of just wrap and
in a very modern-day sack.
Modern day, wrap you down, pull you down, right? Wrap you up, pull you down. Whereas even the smaller guys, the Kyler Murray's, like, there's some type of physical resistance to these things that you see even with smaller-sized players. We've seen it before. We've seen, there can always be just a blind side out of nowhere. These weren't blind side shots. These were shots where he was up in the play, you know, and able to involve himself in that play. And it just looks like he's really little, and maybe he's too little. And yes, he can throw a football and maybe he can hit his target, but there's too much of that in the game to avoid. You know, you can't avoid the push to the chest and the sack. And if he's going to get bounced off the turf like a Pop Warner player, he's going to get concussed, and maybe he's too small to play football.
I was never a big fan of Tua. And so my criticism of him is strictly professional. And from an evaluation standpoint, here's the play that you're talking about. If you're listening on the radio, Tua scrambling to the left and just gets touched up. He gets touched up because that's what happens in football. He gets pushed to the ground and he's out, man. Like, he is out. He's shaking his head. He's trying to walk back to the huddle, and now he's got the drunk.
Now he's doing he's doing a Life Alert commercial halfway through that.
At one point, Tua looked like the girl in Vegas who's drunk and wearing heels.
Exactly. Breaks the one heel, and the rest of the night she's carrying him around wearing bare feet. Yeah. It's disgusting. Yeah, exactly.
And this is just an average sack. This is an average takedown. The second hit wasn't blindsided. He saw it coming. He couldn't escape. And it was just a simple takedown.
And the my
and now
the Cincinnati sack. I'm sorry, the Cincinnati. I just want me to jump in there. The Cincinnati sack. I mean, if that guy wanted to be dirty, who knows what would have happened to Tua in that
right.
sack? I mean,
right. So as we are looking at the landscape of safety in sports and how we view guys, if the team doesn't value these the player's safety, we're just watching.
Yeah.
We're humans watching. And if you have to be moved to the point where you see that and you feel bad for a player who, you know, you're not a favorite. He's not my favorite player. I don't care whether he's good or not. When you see a person down like that, the human in you, to the hell with the sport, the human in you goes, oh, my God, is he okay?
Yeah.
Is he going to die?
Yeah. And, like, I'm not a fan of Tua, but I don't hate Tua. Like, I'd like to see the Tua that we're kind of, like, being sold is and what I think could be, you know, as far as an exciting player, the kind of player that with the right players around him, maybe, you know, I want to be able to watch Miami Dolphins
right.
good football. I mean, I want my Browns to be the best team, but that's not, you know, you still are a football fan. So at the end
yes.
of the day, but what I'm really seeing now is when, you know, you'll hear it sometimes at college, well, he's too small to play, but you really don't, you know, he might be.
You rarely get to see
he
it.
He might be. Like, I'm watching a guy that just might be too small to play.
Like I said, I hadn't heard it put that way before, but it makes the most sense that he is smaller than what he plays.
Yes.
So hopefully, health-wise, he can get himself in better. He can get himself kind of back to a center point to get on the field. Obviously, thank God he's out this week. But the idea that you can, you know, ice a brain injury, that's not – we don't know enough.
Right.
We know about the long-term effects of concussions. We do not know enough about short-term effects
well,
of concussions to send him out there.
I think you can easily deduce what – you know, it's funny that they say, well, we don't know enough about the short-term effects. Look how much you know about the long-term effects. I think the short-term effects are speaking for themselves.
Self-explanatory.
I think they're speaking for themselves here. I think that they're kind of just announcing, you know, what they are and what they're going to turn into. So, I mean, yeah, I hope the guy's all right. I hope they're not going to just feed him to the wolves and he lets himself be fed to the wolves and,
right.
you know, out of just the fear of losing status or a job or being who he wanted to be in life, because it ain't going to be worth it getting thrown around like that, man. I mean, wow.
So last night, Monday Night Football, Rams, 49ers. And this game is obviously locally important to us because the Rams have kind of put a hold on the community here in your grocery stores. If you've gone to the grocery store, you've seen Rams.
Mm-hmm.
But are you watching the fan run on the field, or is that me?
That must be you.
That is me. I was like, wait, what is that noise?
Yeah, it's not me.
So the absurdity about last night was, I am a Sean McVay guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a Matthew Stafford guy. I've always been a head coach. Their head coach is the key to that team. The idea that, you know, Cooper Kupp is so great, people can accept it, they can have it. I like other guys. What you saw last night was the inability, I think for one of the few times we've seen the inability for the Rams head coach, Sean McVay, to scheme other guys open. He can scheme his number one guy open because that's the way the offense is designed to scheme the number one guy open. The number two guy has to have legit talent, as in Robert Woods, as in Odell Beckham Jr., as in Van Jefferson. They have to have a trait that allows them to individualize. Allen Robinson doesn't have that talent. He's not a separator. He's a hands guy. Because the Rams looked terrible last night. And I know people say, oh, they were in the fourth quarter. Have you watched any NFL games? Everybody's in the fourth quarter. The Bears scored 12 points all on field goals. They were in the fourth quarter. The Browns were in it in the fourth quarter. The Ravens are winning by 20 points in every game. Somehow in the fourth quarter, the other team's alive. And beating them, by the way, because the Dolphins and the Ravens did it to them. So what did you take from last night?
Well, I talked that they couldn't run the ball. I mean, they couldn't run the ball at all. And if you're not going to run the ball against the 49ers, or at least crack something, get some type of penetration, you know, you don't – obviously, they're a good defense. You may not run it down right. their throat, but you've got to be able to get runs. I mean, they ran for 57 yards. 18 carries, three yards a carry, and they had an 11-yard run in there. So they're well under 2 yards a carry if you take that one 11-yard run out, the only double-digit run they've had. And that's what you have to do, even if you don't run the ball down somebody's throat. You've got to get some 8, 10, 11, 12-yard runs once in a while, because that defense, you don't run on them, and then they just come after you even more. So – it's Stafford in a situation where we're in throwing downs all the time. I don't think Stafford played terribly bad as much as the 49ers just smothered that running game and made that offense play mm-hmm. from its back of its feet all day long. And, you know, get to try to even just get to the sticks for a first down was just, they made it a nightmare of it. And really real close. There's a real close. I don't know. The Deebo Samuel catch and run for the touchdown. I mean, that's a fraction from getting pick six. That thing is so close. You see that? Look at that replay. That thing is so close to get.
That was anybody's ball.
That ball was so close. I mean, it's almost like it was so easy to pick, the guy forgot to pick it. Like, it was just like one of those, oh my God, I should have been. Like, he and Deebo goes and snatches that thing out quick and brings it down, notices that the defense has overcommitted and has that open field. And that's the huge play that really does separate the game at the end of the day. The 49ers defense obviously made life hell on Stafford running for his life. What? How many times did he get sacked? 7, 8?
And they've got massive line problems.
And so you're averaging around 2 and a change a carry, and you get your quarterback sacked 7 times. And you're kind of still in it. In a way, you're kind of still in it in the fourth quarter to make a play, to make that big play if it would have been made earlier on that pick six. But Deebo turns around. So that's a kind of a 12-point swing, or at least a 6-point swing. You think you can at least knock that ball down. You didn't get beat by Garoppolo per se. I mean, he played the kind of game San Francisco needs him to play every Sunday if their defense is going to play like that and they're going to be successful. So that's kind of what I took away from it. If San Francisco's defense starts doing this on a regular basis, and they've got to be able to, you know, sack the quarterback often and let their, because that only makes Jimmy G better. The worse you make the other team's quarterback, you make Jimmy G a little bit better. So, yes. The more times you sack, whether it's Stafford or whether it's Geno Smith or whether whoever else, Kyler Murray, whoever else you're going to play, that team has to be at the quarterback's throat to make Jimmy G that much better for them every Sunday. And if they do that, they're going to get those results, 24-9, you know, 20-12. That's how they want to win.
I thought that what I saw was – believe it or not, the 49ers looking like the 49ers. Mm-hmm. The Trey Lance experiment, however you want to chalk it up, I think that created so much uncertainty in that locker room. Whether Jimmy G was going to play or not, whether he was on a roster or not, you still didn't know what Trey Lance could do. I think Jimmy Garoppolo fits this team like a glove. And his shortcomings, they all know them. He's not going to surprise anyone in a 49er uniform or front office. And they're comfortable with that. And right. They can move forward with the way he plays football because they've been to NFC championship games with the way he plays football. So, you know,
they were a quarter away from winning a Super Bowl. I mean, they were right there. It was in their hands. And, I mean, he didn't help the cause, really. But
they were there. And if he right. learns from that, if they're in that position again, don't tell me that Jimmy hasn't learned from a lot of things. He's a winning quarterback. I mean, there's a win-loss record. It's hard to say. So, you know, yesterday he realized, and I just think you're right. I mean, I feel bad for Trey Lance for hurting himself, but I just think when you look at right. the San Francisco team as a makeup, you know, with the running backs that they have and with the way you can use Debo, you know, I just think, you know, they're more, I think a Trey Lance, any type of running quarterback is going to muck up good play calling. And I think it's going to muck mm-hmm. up scheming. And I think they're a scheme running team first, which means let your blockers scheme block for run designs and let good running right. backs pound it down the other team's throat. And if you have to punt, guess what? You're going to go pin somebody back inside their own 20 or 15. You're going to send out that defense to go knock their heads in and get the ball back. And guess what? Now Jimmy might have it at the 50. And now Debo, it's one pass away for a touchdown. So I think, you know, in the long run, I just don't think they were going to be successful with Trey Lance healthy and being able to offer what he offers them for the style of football that they have to play to win football games the way they want to. Because if they get locked in, you are succumbing to, you are a victim yes. of their pace. They control the whole pace. You saw it last year in Green Bay on the road. Like, when they want to do that and when they can, you or I might be able to quarterback that team as long as we don't go backwards or turn the ball over, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, so they want, that's what they want. They want to win a Super Bowl 14-7.
So I think the division has now shook out to everybody's 2-2. I don't think anybody in their mama saw the Seahawks being 2-2, but they are. I think the Cardinals are a surprising 2-2 because I thought they would be better. I thought San Francisco would kind of be around here after watching them in week one against the Bears. And I didn't know what to think about the Rams. Now I'm absolutely confident that they're going to need some additions. I don't know if they'll be able to do rescue additions like they did last year, but they're going to need some additions. Les Snead is going to have to go in his bag of F those picks and come back out with maybe re-signing Odell Beckham Jr. and finding somebody else to help that pass rush. Because right now, or better yet, block yeah. Block for Matthew Stafford, because last night was bad and probably going to get worse. I thought the AFC West was a very interesting level of familiarity as well. The Chiefs look dominant. The Broncos look like they've been exposed. The Chargers are fighting their way through injuries, shocker. And Vegas finally got a win over the Broncos. So we thought that was going to be the best division in football, probably in history. It's now shaping up like two new head coaches are trying to learn their rosters. And I don't believe one of them is a good coach, and that's Nathaniel Hackett. I don't think he's a good coach. The jury is still out on the Vegas coach, McDaniels, but I'm sold that the Broncos don't have a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, Hackett may be over his head, whereas McDaniel's not over his head. Even if he doesn't find success, it won't be because he's over his head. It'll just because right. maybe he's just not the right guy for the job. You know, that's just right. going to come down to, I think,
some guys just
that's just going to come down to the X's and O's and the way everybody just kind of is or isn't in a locker room, right? It's not going to mm-hmm. be because it's totally over his head. Where I think Hackett, you know, any of these guys, I bet you if you asked them, they'd wish Hackett was a great coach as much as he's a great guy, right? Like, they probably right. really want that deep down. But I think really at the end of the day, yeah, it's interesting. And even with the Chargers battling some injuries, you know, I just kind of get the vibe that, you know, everybody was all wrong on this one. I really got a feeling like Kansas City's going to win this thing going away.
It feels like
division.
That.
I really do. And maybe the Chargers, the Chargers can get some help back and rattle some wins off in the games they're always supposed to win And that's the only way I think they're going to try to keep pace to this kind of pace that KC's going to lay out. They flubbed up against the Colts, and maybe that's probably the best thing. Maybe they getting that loss out of the way early so nobody has to be like, wow, what's their record? Oh, they're under, they're 9-0. Maybe that's not what they've needed. That hasn't, you know, served them in the past, being that, you know, carrying that big old torch. So just, you know what? Hey, let's get one bad one out of our way. Let's go and put the pedal to the metal. And I feel like right now, after last night, talking about the AFC West, I know everybody's 2-2 and Geno's surprising in Seattle. And but I really think that win last night, with now Garoppolo reacclimated back and prepped into the system for a second week, I really think San Francisco looks like the clear front runner in that division. And it's going to take what you said, maybe some additions, or really coming together for the Rams to kind of be that Chargers of that division and do what they can to follow suit. I just don't, I'm not bought in on the Cardinals. I think reality will set in eventually for those two teams when it comes to wins and losses down the season. And I think it's going to be the Rams gripping, holding on to everything they can to try to keep pace with a 49er team that's only going to get better as long as that defense stays healthy and Deebo Samuel's on the field. Woo! That's going to be it. They're tough.
We have another... When I say we, Jason is allowing me to take part in tomorrow night's stand up at the La Jolla Comedy Store.
Come on out.
We are inviting all of you. I mean, you got to pay to get in. Yeah,
$10.
You got it. You got it.
Walk up, $10 online.
If you had an opportunity to see us, see him, you're getting your money's worth. $10. You actually should pay us on the way out as well.
And
so,
get them now, because I know that the club called and said, you know, there's some tickets moving. They're happy about it. I know I got some like ref buddies coming and some other friends and fans. So bring it on out. $10.90. Alex is coming. I think Cap, after he atones for his sins, is going to show up. So get the great friends out there, right, buddy?
He's got to pay his Jesus tax. He's got to go in.
Actually, I don't think they're a Jesus religion. They're like just God. They're like, well, Jesus was a good guy, but yeah, that Son of God, Virgin Mary stuff's a little out.
You don't really get down with that.
Yeah, they got a good point.
So yeah, man. If you guys get a chance, and if you make time, okay, you only have time for the things you make time for. We'll make time for y'all tomorrow. Yeah. We'll see y'all tomorrow during the show. We'll see y'all during the night. Brown and Lawhead. Peace.